This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world right now, up to the minute, with information of vital importance to people of European descent and people of all heritages around the world who simply want to hear the truth on some of the world media, and this is indeed world media. The Jewish supremacists have so much influence today in media, they literally dominate how we learn of the world. A perfect example, of course, is the recent Joe Scarborough show. It's called Scarborough Country on MSNBC. By the way, there is a Jewish individual named Kaplan who's in charge of that network. And Scarborough has on the program, in addition to myself, has on the program Alan Dershowitz. He would not let me question or debate with Alan Dershowitz. He interviewed me shortly, in a very contentious type of interview. And then he interviewed Dershowitz, and he said, "Come on, Joe, explain this to the people." In other words, you know, this Jewish supremacist, obviously a partisan for Israel, has to explain to the people of the United States the true nature of the paper by Dr. Stephen Walt and by John Mersheimer called The Israeli Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, which was issued by Harvard University, John F. Kennedy School of Government, one of the most famous and probably the most well-known school of government in the United States of America, and certainly the most prestigious university in this country. Interestingly enough, the paper was explained to the people by Alan Dershowitz on that program, and you see it all the time. Who is one of the major commentators, for instance, on CNN? Wolf Blitzer, a former activist with AIPAC. And we can go on and on and on. These people are insinuated in practically every aspect of our society, heavily in media, heavily in campaign financing. Look at the recent scandals with Abramoff, the fellow that's going to prison. He was selling meetings with the president for $25,000 a pop. Tremendous corruption on Capitol Hill. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, very, very staunch, radical, extreme supporter of Israel. The influence is there. I remember a few years ago reading an article in the Wall Street Journal. I don't have it in front of me. I'd like to do some research. Maybe some of you have access to Bactiva who are students at a university, and you can do some research. But I read a story, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal, it could have been the New York Times, but I know that article can be found, which stated, this article I think was written somewhere between 85 and 90. I remember the article very, very distinctly, and I know it's from a major publication, and they were talking about campaign financing, I think in the shadow of an upcoming presidential election. And they mentioned the fact that 50% of the campaign contributions believe it or not, the Republican Party, and 50% of the money received by Democratic Party came from Jewish sources, which is a huge percentage considering Jews are only 3% of the population. Now, all this is not anti-Semitic because I'm not saying that all Jews are necessarily extremists. They're not necessarily radical Likud. They're not necessarily a big-time supporter of Israel. In fact, I know among the Jewish community there is certainly some opposition to some of the policies of Israel and some of the policies of the Likud. And there is, you know, a mix of feelings among the Jewish community. That doesn't change the fact that the great overwhelming majority of the Jewish community supports what their organizations provide for. And the major and most powerful Jewish organizations in the United States of America are controlled by these extremists, by these Likudites. and they in turn support these radical policies of Israel, and in turn support policies which pervert and subvert the issues of the United States of America. The issue to them is the welfare of Israel first, not that of the United States of America. And that's a harsh thing to say. I'm not saying all Jews have that opinion and have that position, but certainly there's a pretty good evidence, there's tremendous evidence you can marshal that says this is a significant factor. On the davidduke.com website, those of you who are listening to this program who've not gone to the website, you can find it very easily at www.davidduke.com. I have an extensive quote there by Stephen Steinlight. And be sure to read my books, by the way, My Awakening and Jewish Supremacism, where I quote from Steinlight, where he talks about Jewish loyalty to Israel and Jewish anger and Jewish suspicion and Jewish opposition to Gentiles. And I must say that Steinlight very clearly expresses the fact that he views the Gentiles as, and he was taught by his Jewish leaders that Gentiles are less intelligent, you know, less sensitive, less moral than Jews, and that you really couldn't trust Gentiles. And so Gentiles are really a lesser people. Well, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Gentiles make up about 90%, 97%, I should say, of the American population. And if he thinks Gentiles are that way, he doesn't think that much of the country. And I don't think these people think that much of the United States of America. A good friend of mine, you've heard him before on my program, Bob Twain, is a medical student here in Moscow, a very higher degreed computer engineer, and quite an interesting and well-read individual. He pointed out to me a number of Jewish articles where they literally call themselves a nation wherever they live around the world. They are a nation. Well, if you have allegiance to a nation, and you're like Rabbi Wise, who said, well, I've been in America for 200 years, but a Jew for 3,000 years. Well, obviously, you know, there is a conflict of interest there. And indeed, the entire Iraq war was basically constructed. The two main individuals behind the Iraq war were Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, two radical Jewish supremacists. And Paul Wolfowitz, along with Feith and Wormser, wrote a paper called A Clean Break, A Strategy for Securing the Realm. And this was a paper written about the necessity to take out Saddam Hussein, have a war against Iraq. And this paper was written not for the United States of America, even though Perle worked for the Defense Department. This paper was written for Benjamin Netanyahu, the president at that time of Israel. And the realm they were talking about securing was that of Israel's realm. Now, in the wake of 9/11, if you remember, in fact, I read an article by the individual who I'm going to focus this program on, and his name is Elliot Cohen, and he's one of the primary leaders of the so-called neocons in the United States of America, and he, in fact, is the neocon that authored and promoted the phrase World War IV to describe the conflict we're in, and he promotes that war. He wants that war. He seeks that war. And I can tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, that whoever would seek this clash of civilization, this kind of war, is an enemy to humanity, an enemy to decency, an enemy to the United States of America, because we don't need this war. You know, we've got ourselves involved in a war on terror, and why? You know, we have been dragged into this war because of our activities in the Middle East, which have not been in the interest of the people of the United States of America, but in the interest of this small Jewish minority that has so much political, economic, and media clout in the United States of America. So here's Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz. They get this war underway with some cheerleading from the media. And now we have a war where thousands of Americans have died. We have a war where tens of thousands are being wounded and maimed. We save many more lives than we used to in war, but many more people come back without their legs and arms. We used to die from those kinds of injuries. Our death toll should be already probably about 20,000, except for the modern, medical equipment that we have and the modern means of protecting our soldiers, at least 10,000, I would say. Used to be when you got your arm in Second World War, you got your arm blown off or leg blown off, you probably would end up dying. It's not quite that way today at all. In fact, it's gotten much advanced since the time of the Vietnam War. But we have so many Americans now coming back maimed. I mean, really terribly maimed. Their faces simply blown away. But they are still alive. Not able to see, not able to smell, not able to speak or to kiss their wife. But they're alive. Or they come back home that are never able to enjoy of making love with their wife, or never having the joy of that in a possible future wife. Or they come back crippled. Or they come back terribly disfigured. Or they come back where they can never see or experience, you know, the wonders of sight. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a situation that is terribly anti-American in Iraq. Our soldiers and sailors and Marines were sent off for a lie. And I say these things not because I'm unpatriotic in any way. As you know, I'm a very strong patriotic. I've been considered an extreme right-winger, I guess, most of my life. I come from a military background. You know, I was an ROTC in the university. I taught Laotian Army officers during the Vietnam War, working with the State Department in doing so, teaching Army and Air Force officers. I also did a bunch of runs down to through Laos with Air America, dropping rice and doing some of that. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't worried about the dangerous parts of it at that time. When you're 21, it's not that big of a deal to experience the danger that you might be a little more timid about when you get older. But I say these things not because I'm any sort of a peacenik. I think if somebody attacks my country or threatens my family or hurts my family, I certainly believe in self-defense, and I believe in self-defense for our society 100%. But, ladies and gentlemen, I don't believe that our soldiers and sailors and Marines should die for a lie. I don't believe they should die in the interest of a foreign country where the interests of America weren't really at stake, and that's exactly what happened with the Iraq War. You know, right after 9/11, the people such as, and I can give you a perfect example, Elliot Cohen, the man I'm going to quote from in a few minutes, he said that immediately that we should go ahead and attack Iraq. They're the source of terrorism. Yet not one of the hijackers came from Iraq. Iraq had no part in 9/11. Iraq had no part in terrorism against the United States. And Iraq used to be our ally. They were our client state, so to speak, when they went to war against Iran, which was, I guess, the main enemy for many, many years. But Saddam Hussein was a thorn in the side of the Israelis. He supported the Palestinians mightily. He sent a few Scud missiles into Israel. And again, Iraq is very important for the balance of power in the Middle East. And Israel decided that it was a strategic must to take Saddam Hussein out. And so they did it. But they didn't do it with Israeli troops and Israeli blood and Israeli money. No, they did it with American troops and American blood and American money. And with damaging America all over the world. In fact, taking a little pressure off of Israel as far as terrorism goes and bombings, because Israel has become replaced in that region by the great Satan of the United States of America. And I think this may sound a little hard, a little conspiratorial, but I don't think they mind that. I think that they saw this coming, and I think that they realized that this entire war would be a very good thing for them. It also took, you know, the minds of the American people off the entire Israeli-Palestinian situation, the terrible oppressions that are going on against the Palestinians. Getting involved in this big war really had a big impact in doing that. That's my cheering section in the background. And we certainly appreciate that, and thanks to my lovely dog, which keeps me company as I write and spend long hours in front of the computer when I'm not in class. Today, and I had a long preface to this, but I want to talk for a moment about the latest foray in the Harvard paper controversy that's going on. There was an article in the Washington Post, and on April 5th, by Elliot A. Cohen. Now, Elliot Cohen is a leading Jewish extremist neocon who is the first to promote what he calls World War IV. Now, he's launched an unbridled attack against me and against the authors of the important Harvard JFK School of Government paper called The Israeli Lobby and the U.S. Foreign Policy. Now, all Cohen can do, as is usually the case among the Jewish extremists, is to scream anti-Semitic at the top of his lungs. And he does that in the paper, and using also words such as bigotry to describe the authors of the paper. Now, that's all he can do, and that's usually the case among the Jewish extremists. All they can do is scream, and that's what they do. The proponents of this ethnic supremacist, terrorist state of Israel are always the first ones to accuse others of ethnic supremacism or ethnic hatred, such as their use of the term anti-Semite against those who simply tell the truth about their policies, the Jewish policies, the Jewish extremist policies, I should say, that hurt the American people. And here are the beginnings of the article, and I'll quote to you about them, and it's kind of interesting because these people, when they attack us, you know, they can't help but talk the truth, to talk about what's really going on. And I tell you, the average person is not so dumb. You know, when they hear this, even if it's coming from a person who's putting this idea down, it makes sense, and immediately you get a lot of consensus about it. Now, the name of the article in the Washington Post, again, the leading newspaper that affects government in our country, the name of the article is called "Yes, It's Anti-Semitic." Here are the first two paragraphs. Academic papers posted on a Harvard website don't normally attract enthusiastic praise from prominent white supremacists, but John Mersheimer and Stephen Waltz, the Israeli Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, has won David Duke's endorsement as a modern-day Declaration of American Independence and a vindication of the ex-Klansman's earlier work, presumably including his path-breaking book, Jewish Supremacism. Walt and Mersheimer contend that American national security dictates distancing ourselves from the state of Israel, that U.S. support for Israel has led to such disasters as America's status as the number one target for Islamic terrorists. So true. And that such an otherwise inexplicable departure from good sense can be accounted for only by the power of the lobby, their capitalization, an overwhelmingly Jewish force abetted by some Christian evangelicals and a Gentile neocon collaborator or two who have hijacked American foreign policy and controlled it for decades. Now, you can read the entire article at thewashingtonpost.com if you're certainly on the Internet. You should be able to be on the Internet if you're hearing this program. The Harvard paper simply tells the basic truth about the Jewish extremist manipulation of the American government for the interests of a foreign power. But in fact, to tell you the truth, the paper does not go far enough. For instance, in the Levant affair, Israel actively terrorized, bombed American installations in Egypt in an attempt to get America in a war against that nation. Now, that was a supreme act of treachery, which not only constituted terrorism against American personnel and property, but would have led to countless additional American lives lost in an unjust war. And it would have been a conflict that would have cost billions of dollars for the American people. Now, many of you reading this will not even know what I'm talking about. The Levant affair, Operation Susanna, most of you have never heard of it. Yet, this is easily documented. The Israeli defense minister even had to resign after the plot failed and was exposed. Few Americans even know that only a few short months ago, the Israeli president called the terrorists who attacked America heroes. That's right. He called them heroes, and he gave them medals in a formal ceremony. It's also clear that Israel purposefully made a terrorist surprise attack on our Navy ship, the USS Liberty, killing 23 and wounding 183 other Americans. Now, you can go to the Liberty Survivors Association, the the servicemen, the Navy personnel that survived that dastardly attack, and they'll tell you what they think about Israel. Both the U.S. Secretary of State at the time, as well as the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, both have said that the evidence is overwhelming that the Israeli attack was deliberate. Now, my sense is, ladies and gentlemen, that to send billions of American dollars to a nation that commits terrorism against us and awards terrorists who attack us with medals and calls them heroes is certainly going against the American national interest. And that fact is something you can't get away from. If you had an honest press that reported these incidents, if the people of the United States saw in the evening news Israeli terrorists getting medals for their attack on American installations, if attacks that went wrong, one of their bombs went off prematurely and they were caught, if they saw this, ladies and gentlemen, if they saw this, then maybe they might have a different opinion about Israel. And this was not done by some terrorist group in Israel. It was not done by some odd group of extreme, strange, violent Jews in Israel. It was done by the Israeli government itself, the government of Israel. The fact that Israel can get away with such treason and still get billions of American dollars in the support Israel gets in the United Nations, for instance, it's got to be some sort of a lesson to people about the immense power that they have in our country to influence policy, to cover up things, and to control our politicians. Now, how can the Israeli power over our government be denied when at the same time that AIPAC, which is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, at the same time, this largest Israeli lobby, has officials on trial for espionage against our country, against the United States of America, that most of the members of Congress can take money from them with impunity? I mean, what if officials of a Syrian lobbying organization were on trial for espionage, spying against America? Would any congressman go within 10 miles of their meetings, much less take money from them? And yet we have presidents of the United States speaking at them, vice presidents, leading members of Congress, of the United States Senate. Why is there no scandal, ladies and gentlemen? Now, the answer to these questions lies in the fact of the overwhelming political and media power of Jewish extremists who manipulate both the media, to a great extent, and the government of the United States. It is the proverbial gorilla in the room that no one dares mention. Why not mention it? Well, because you'll be labeled anti-Semites, bigots, and God knows what else. In fact, you might even be shown to say similar things to David Duke. God forbid. Those of you who are new to this question, if you read my site, www.davidduke.com, with an open mind, you will find my opinions and the way I express them quite different than alleged by the mainstays of American media. Browse my site, read the articles that interest you, and then let me know what you think with an email or a letter. Of course, if you want a really deep discussion, quickly footnoted and documented, read my latest book, Jewish Supremacism, which, by the way, was the first major book to reveal that the war in Iraq was not fought for America, but was a bloody, unnecessary, brutal, expensive war launched for Israel. A war that is catastrophically harming many important American interests, in addition to wrongly spilling the blood of 20,000 wounded and killed Americans. Why are the lies about the weapons? Why were there lies about, quote, weapons of mass destruction? Well, my answer to that is that Americans would not have been willing to pay the catastrophic price of the Iraq war for Israel's imperialistic agenda. So Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and the thoroughly Jewish New York Times and even Mr. Elliot Cohen, author of the Washington Post piece, they had to make up the lies about Saddam being a threat to America. The war was and is the real threat to America and the Mideast. the war itself, not Saddam Hussein. And Israel and the Israeli lobby put us into this war without any sense of what's good for the people of the United States of America. Now, in the Washington Post, Cohen goes into a lot of things, and I'm only going to talk about a couple of them tonight. And again, you go to my website and you can read a lot about these issues. Let me quote here. He said, one of Mearsheimer's University of Chicago colleagues has characterized this as, quote, piss poor monocausal social science. Well, of course, it's, you know, it's just like name calling, right? It's a wretched piece of scholarship. Israeli citizenship rests, quote, on the principle of blood kinship, unquote, it says, and yet the country has a million non-Jewish citizens who vote. And okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about that a second. You know, because there are some Arab citizens doesn't mean that Israel is concerned about keeping the citizenry of the country overwhelmingly Jewish. Practically every Jewish leader, both in Israel and in the United States, has spoken repeatedly about the demographic danger to Israel and how they're committed to keeping Israel remaining as a, quote, Jewish state. And by the way, the way they mean Jewish state is not simply practicing the Jewish religion. They're talking about Jewish blood. Israel has an immigration policy based on Jewish descent, Jewish genes. Palestinians who were born there can't even come back home. You know, so, I mean, the Jewish state is based on blood kinship. And this man who wrote this article, he knows better. He is a Cohen, which means he's a Cohanim. He is a member of the Jewish elite by virtue of his birth. In fact, in the article, he says he's a proud Jew. And in DavidDuke.com, I have another article about Jewish policy. And I point out that the writer of this piece, if he lived in Israel, could not marry a Jewish girl, a Jew who was practicing the Jewish faith, if she had a single drop of Gentile blood, no matter how far back in her ancestry. If it was obvious, or was a fact that she was part Gentile, he could not marry her. And that is by Israeli law. Now, you're going to tell me, or he's going to tell us, that Israel is not based on blood kinship. Everybody who knows anything about Israel knows that Israel is based on blood kinship. The right of return, the right of people of Jewish descent to return to Israel and create a state of their own. Yes, there are some non-Jewish citizens in Israel who can vote, but the Jewish state is very careful to keep them controlled. And as far as representation, for instance, in the Jewish government, how can it be you have such a large percentage, 20% or so of the population, and yet there's not one cabinet member who are Palestinian? Imagine if that would be the case in the United States. Even though we have a smaller percentage of blacks in this country than there are, in fact, Palestinians on the land area of Jerusalem, of Israel. The reason why that there are these Palestinians there is because, again, this entire land was stolen from the Palestinians. And they were able to terrorize many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians and drive them off of their land, away from their businesses, their homes, where they lived for many generations. But some were not exterminated, as people such as Ariel Sharon and other Jewish extremists would have liked. So that's, you know, that's another good example. Of course, again, he's writing in the Washington Post, and there's not going to be probably anybody who would even dare to challenge him on the blood kinship issue. There's certainly not going to be any writers for any major newspapers going to talk about these things. But read my article from a Jewish publication called Not Jewish Enough to Marry a Cohen. Of course, there's complete segregation in Israel between Jews and non-Jews, and schools, and many villages, towns, apartment buildings, and even in the settlements which they've stolen, which America was supposedly opposed to, and yet they still did, some ally again, which really hurt us with the rest of the Arabic world, and again, made one more nail in that coffin of hatred toward us. And even in those settlements that they've stolen from the Palestinians, they're not just taken over and be the dominant force in the settlement. No, these settlements are basically for Jews only. A Palestinian can't even live in them, or any of the houses in them, or within the bounds of that settlement. So, you know, don't tell me that Israel is not based on race. It's absolutely our ethnic descent. It's a certain genetic descent, because, of course, it certainly is. He goes on to say that Osama bin Laden's grievance with the United States begins with Israel, but he says that really it's really about American bases in Saudi Arabia. And so, let me tell you something. Osama bin Laden, and I've been reading this for years, and I have some documents in my book, Jewish Supremacism. Osama bin Laden spoke extensively about the crimes of the Israeli state and the crimes of America for supporting the Israeli state. He said these policies have led to the death of, he says, my people, you know, of my fellow Muslims and my fellow Arabic people. And he says he hates the United States for it. He warned the United States repeatedly about the Jewish control of our country. He understands that Israel couldn't exist except for the power of the United States. But again, saying that he was only more concerned about American bases in Saudi Arabia is one more perfect example of how these neocon Jewish supremacists twist the facts and twist the truth. The only reason that they're concerned about American troops in Saudi Arabia, primarily, is because they're concerned about the fact that our troops support Israel. If we had a couple bases and we weren't supporting their enemy, they wouldn't be so angry about us, ladies and gentlemen. And the anger stems for that. And if it was just troops by themselves having some bases around the world, some economic bases with some economic support as kind of an ally, a supporter. America has troops or bases in many countries that are simply allies to us. We get along with them. We do certain things for them. We ask certain things in return. The problem with the bases in Saudi Arabia or elsewhere is not because simply that we have bases there. It's because we have supported policies. We have supported the criminal actions, really, of Israel. Now, I'm not saying Osama bin Laden's not a criminal for doing what he did. And no question, he should be punished to the fullest extent of international law and codes and anything we can do. I mean, it was a terrible act where these thousands of innocent people died. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm against any innocent people dying on either side. And I do recognize that the policies that we've pursued, the fact that we've let Israel hijack American foreign policy, has really made America so hated in the world, hated so much that men were willing to sacrifice their own lives, emulate themselves to try to get at us. That's hate. That's heavy hate. They didn't attack America because they hated democracy. In fact, bin Laden has had many tapes where he believes in democracy. The radical Islamics would love democracy in the Middle East because they know the people on the street are much more in their favor than those higher-ups in business and government who are doing business in the United States and Europe and elsewhere, oftentimes doing business with Jewish economists, and they have to deal with the World Bank, and they've got to deal with World Trade Organization where the Jewish influence is very strong. So, you know, they know that if they had true democracy, that the people of the Middle East would be better represented on the anti-Israeli issue. Then he goes on to say, inept, even kooky academic work then, but is it anti-Semitic? If by anti-Semitism one means obsessive and irrationally hostile beliefs about Jews, if one accuses them of disloyalty, subversion, or treachery, of having occult powers, participating in secret combinations, etc., etc., if one systematically selects everything unfair, ugly, or wrong about Jews as individuals, as a group, and equally systematically suppresses any exculpatory information, why, yes, this paper is anti-Semitic. Well, again, this guy, and when they control the press, you see, they can say anything they want to because they know that there's not going to be any counter to them. That's one reason we have to be thankful for the Internet. Well, first off, it's not irrationally hostile to talk about the incredible power of the Jewish lobby. The Jewish lobby itself boasts of their power. It's not irrational to talk about their economic power and their influence on the political parties through contributions, their influence in individual candidates through contributions, their influence on candidates and parties through the media, because they own and control a lot of media. And And by the way, if one accuses them of disloyalty, subversion, and treachery, there's nothing in this paper that said that all Jews were disloyal, subversive, or treacherous. And I don't say that. I've even, you know, praised many individual Jews in my books and in my talks. And my book, in fact, is dedicated to a Jewish individual, Israel Shahak. And I know many Jews that have stood up very honestly. You know, Dr. Finkelstein, for instance, has done a lot of work on the Jewish supremacists. Israel Shamir, another Jewish individual who I've shared podiums with around the world in conferences against Zionism. These men, and all I like, I admire. I admire these men. And again, I may be able to use my admiration against them. But the point is that if you accuse the two AIPAC officials who are now being charged with espionage, if you talk about those Jews who committed espionage in tremendous numbers during the 1950s and 60s for the Soviets, you know, if you talk about the one of the biggest spy case probably since the second, I'd say at least since the 1960s, which was the Jonathan Pollard case, which eviscerated our intelligence network in Eastern Europe, and you say that this man was guilty of disloyalty, in fact, treason, subversion, treachery. If you talk about the attack on the Liberty, if you talk about the Levant affair, you know, how is an anti-Semitic to tell the truth? You know, so, you know, it's just, again, this guy can't, you know, he, you know, they can say these things because they have no one to challenge, the same way that Mr. Joe Scarborough wouldn't have me debate Mr. Dershowitz. And he talks about other things. And he changes the pitch, and he talks about it's the authors dismissed or ignore past Arab threats to exterminate Israel, the sewer of Arab or anti-Semitic literature pollutes public discourse in the Arab world, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that has nothing to do with the fact that the Arabs hate Israel. The Arabs hate Israel because of the fact of the crimes Israel's committed against them and their people. For the fact that Palestine has been stolen from them. The fact that hundreds of thousands of Palestinians and others have been tortured. The fact that Israel invaded Lebanon and killed tens of thousands of people. That Israel has manipulated America into the Iraq War and caused the death of tens of thousands of men, women, and children. These are the reasons why, you know, they're angry with us. And the fact that the Arabs are mad at them has nothing to do with the fact that they are manipulating American foreign policy. Finally, he says, quote, that he says, if this sounds personal, it's although I'm only a footnote target for Mearsheimer and Walt, I'm a public intellectual and proud Jew, sympathetic to Israel and extensively engaged in our nation's military affairs, vaguely conservative and occasionally hawkish. Well, again, one of these people, vaguely conservative, the truth is he's basically a Trotskyite, and they've morphed into so-called conservatives to advance their, you know, their political agenda. That's really what's going on. It's been going on for years with these so-called neocons. And he is a proud Jew. Well, could you imagine, you know, Walt and Mearsheimer, those guys didn't get up and said, well, we're proud Gentiles. Could you imagine the reaction in the media if somebody got up and said, we're proud Gentiles and we don't like, you know, these Jewish, disloyal people controlling our policy in regards to another country? Could you imagine the outcry that would have taken place? But if a Jew stands up and says, I'm a proud Jew, you know, and I support Israel, that's fine. And but it's just amazing, again, the incredible chutzpah of these people. I like to use the Jewish word because it so expresses what they are. Other supposed members of the lobby, he says, let me go on and quote him his last statement. He said, impugning their patriotism or mine is not scholarship or policy advocacy. It is merely and unforgivably bigotry. Well, let me tell you something. Mr. Cohen has got his nerve. Bigots, anti-Semites, you know, this is how they work. They work by slander. They've always worked by slander. And you know, fortunately, it's not been all Jews that behave that way, but it's people like Cohen that have generally given Jews a bad name. It's the Pharisees who said Jesus Christ, you know, was a magician, a sorcerer, that he was it's what the Jews write in their books, how Christ was a sex pervert that had sex with his donkey, that Mary was a prostitute. I mean, we can go on and on. They have always had the power to deal in slander. They don't argue your ideas. They don't argue your principles. You know, it's been, almost 30 years since I was in the KKK. You know, almost as long as it's been since Robert Byrd was in the KKK. But Robert Byrd doesn't get former Ku Klux Klansman, you know, every time they mention him, does he? I'm a former representative. I'm a PhD. I'm a professor. I mean, we just don't have an equal standard, do we here? No, they can't argue with your ideas, so they have to throw in these prefixes, and they have to throw in these vicious adjectives to try to turn people against you. And one way they're attacking this paper is by saying that these are the same things that David Duke has said for years. Well, I can't change that. It is the same things I've said for years. But as I said also in my paper, in my article on DavidDuke.com, that the truth is their paper, the Mearsheimer and Wald paper, doesn't go far enough. The problem is even much deeper than they talk about. And you should read my chapter on media supremacy on DavidDuke.com to get a good idea of that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I've enjoyed the show tonight. I hope you've learned a few things and been kind of motivated. I'm certainly motivated right now. We are getting tremendous amounts of hits on our website. We're just getting tens of thousands of unique visits every day. And so these attacks, you know, it used to be that when you did something like this, so they gave you an attack in the Washington Post or New York Times or Newsweek or Houston's Royal Report or on a television program, and they said terrible things about you, that was it. They had the power, and there was no answer. Today, they mention your name. They simply type in, people will just type in David Duke in Google. It's interesting to people. They come look at my site, and they read what I have to say. In fact, now they can even hear what I have to say, such as in this broadcast. It's a fantastic tool. And I tell you, if people can read both sides, they'll realize that it's not David Duke who is the intolerant, anti-Semite. It is they who are intolerant anti-gentilists, if that's the right word for it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks a lot. And I'm going to tell you that our movement is really moving forward. The David Duke Report is going to be mailed out soon. If you're not a subscriber, be sure to go to my website, DavidDuke.com, and subscribe to it. We've got a great issue coming out, and we're also reaching more and more people all the time. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll look forward to being with you tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.